Life just got a little better, thanks to Merryman Herbs.
The following information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. It is for educational purposes only. Always seek the advice of your qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding your medical condition.
Hello, today we have with us Bruce Topping. He's a national educator for Garden of Life. How you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Great. Now, we had talked before. Of course, you know, you're the big probiotic company. Go ahead and talk about it now. We talked a little bit about, I'm always asking you guys, you know, what do you have new? You know, you're one of the leaders, I think, in the protein supplement distribution in the health food stores and so forth. You know, the one thing we always encounter is, you know, protein drink mixes that are just nasty. They taste like chalk. They gag you. You know, you have an aftertaste. Your company is coming out with better and better tasting products. And, you know, of course, when you get into the greens, they're really hard to make taste good. Tell us a little bit about what you got going on there, Bruce.
Yeah, so our newest line is called Raw Protein and Greens. And it's, I think it's our fifth protein, maybe sixth. Over the years.
So you're big in that,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, we've gotten really good at this. And, you know, when we first launched them, I'll just admit, you know, we were not always known for home-running flavors. You know, we had this mentality that it was all about raw materials and how they were processed, and we didn't care how it tasted. We just wanted nutrition.
Yeah, I wanted to be good. It has to be good first, of
That's
course.
Right.
That's
and,
number
and then,
one.
You know, people told us what it tasted like, and we listened. We heard the critics. So now we're launching some proteins, these new raw protein and greens that, I'll be honest, Mike, these are good in water, which
Wow.
Our first ones were dreadful if you put them in water.
Yeah, you'd have stuff floating around and chunks and globs
A lot's been learned in 10 years. You know? So we're really working on the flavor, the texture. Of course, it's made out of organic sprouts. Our big thing with Garden of Life is, of course, what we call dual certified, meaning organic and non-GMO. No bleaching, no solventing, no pasteurization, no hydrolysis, no, you know, all that weird industrial processing.
So it's almost like, you know, you can go out in like in ancient times, you can go out and actually harvest the fresh, God-given, you know, greens and grains and protein, and it's fresh and it comes from a fresh source. So your company is really giving us what we're supposed to be eating, not any of this Frankenfood stuff.
That's right. Yeah, no partial ingredients, no lecithin, no maltodextrin, no pectins, none of that artificial garbage.
Wow. Well, we carry almost your complete line. Of course, you know what, Merryman, we cherry pick. There's probably a couple things your company makes that I found another company makes just a little better. Nothing.
Yeah.
But we carry your company, I will say, has phenomenal products. I think we probably carry about 98% of what you make, which usually with a lot of companies that I deal with, I just maybe, you know, I have one or two items that I carry. But
yeah, totally.
And you've got a huge product line, too. So
we're honored.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you know, I'm honored to be able to carry your products because they're wonderful. Now, there's been a lot of issues with the FDA and anti-inflammatories. I think the first thing that came out that kind of really shocked everybody that we really heard about, it was kind of in the news, but and I think even Dr. McCullough, not to quote him, but some of the alternative leading scientists and doctors in the industry, basically what they're saying now is all pharmaceutical pain relief and anti-inflammatory drugs have major life-threatening adverse side effects, and this is according to the FDA. So that's kind of the news that's out there. So any pain reliever that you're taking has major life-threatening adverse side effects. And just to quote, to clarify all this, May 5th of 2014, the FDA concluded that the data do not support the use of aspirin as a preventative medication by people who have not had a heart attack, stroke, or cardiovascular problems, a use that is called primary prevention. In such people, the benefit has not been established, but risks such as dangerous bleeding into the brain or stomach are still present. Now, I could go on and on and on about aspirin. And Bruce, you probably know it's not naturally made by the white willow. I think back in the late 1800s, like around 1897, is when Bayer actually started making it. And of course, they needed to make mass quantities. So we all know it's made from coal tar, which is a deadly carcinogenic. So it kind of goes to reason that maybe there would be issues with that. So I've never really liked aspirin anyway. But it's getting really beat up. So that baby aspirin every day is not recommended by the FDA. And that's kind of scary. Before that, January 14th, and this really didn't get into the news too much, but this is a quote, FDA is recommending healthcare professionals discontinue prescribing and dispensing prescription combination drug products that contain more than 325 milligrams of acetaminophen per tablet, capsule, or other dosage unit. There are no available data to show that taking more than that per dosage provides additional benefit that outweighs the added risk for liver injury. Further limiting the amount of acetaminophen per dosage unit will reduce the risk of severe liver injury from inadvertent acetaminophen overdose, which can lead to liver failure, liver transplant, and death. And that's been the big problem with acetaminophen is it just absolutely trashes out your liver. Really kind of a scary thing that's going on now. Okay, so we've knocked down aspirin. It's really not something that's good for you, which is acetylsalicylic acid. I always like using the big words. And then the acetaminophen, and I won't say the brand name, but we know what we're talking about there, is actually devastating for your liver. And then in July of last year, July 9th, 2015, FDA is, and this is a quote from the FDA, FDA is strengthening an existing warning in prescription drug labels and over-the-counter OTC drug fact labels to indicate that the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, the NSAIDs, can increase the chance of a heart attack or stroke, either of which can lead to death. Those serious side effects can occur as early as the first few weeks of using an NSAID, and the risk might rise the longer the people that take them. So, you know, you're going to take all the other alternatives, pain relievers, and I'm sure you're all familiar. If not, you can always give me a call and I'll tell you, but I'm not going to do brand names today. So they blow your heart out. So you take aspirin, you bleed to death, you take the acetaminophen, your liver shuts down, and then you try to take the other pain relievers and your heart blows out. And then you kind of wonder, you know, what are you going to do? Well, right now we know the FDA owns the word inflammation. And of course, this is one of the big things with medical freedom. You know, we really don't have freedom of speech in this country, and I've given lectures on that. It's kind of one of these things that you can't really tell the truth, can't really tell what's going on. We have a hard time quoting clinical studies. So, you know, we really can't say that some of these renowned pain relievers like the curcumin extracts are really phenomenal anti-inflammatories. The manufacturers aren't allowed to put that on the label. It kind of goes back to the old stevia, the natural sweetener. They were only allowed to put dietary supplement on the packaging and not sweetener because the FDA actually owned that word and there was really no freedom of speech. So it's kind of a really scary thing that's going on and has been going on in this country. You know, being on the radio and everything, you would think we would have total freedom of speech, but we don't. And it's something that we're, you know, fighting against and trying to, you know, rectify. But anyway, the FDA owns the word inflammation. And a lot of these companies are having a really rough time, you know, promoting their products and so forth that we know are super anti-inflammatories. But you have a product, probiotics, that we know are anti-inflammatory. Now, that just, you know, probiotics we know are good for your digestion, good for acid reflux, good for irritable bowel and diarrhea and Crohn's and on and on and on. But where do we come around? This sounds kind of like maybe one of those deep cures or something. And the cure, we're not really supposed to say either. Uh-oh. But yeah, that's something else I'm not supposed to say. But where do we come around getting to the fact that probiotics can help with inflammation? I've got to know about this. This is really, really exciting.
Totally. Yeah,
yeah, we know it uplifts your mood. It's good for digestion.
You know,
it helps
like
your
everything.
Immune.
The bacteria can do everything, whether it's your brain, your hormones. Everything. So right now, there is a lot of looking at, a lot of investigation into the role of inflammation, like how our immune systems are keyed in and what signals they're secreting. So, you know, obviously, in our gut, there's a huge teeming environment, and there's a lot of gram-negative bacteria. You know,
those are the nasty, like C. diff and
MRSA, Salmonella, Shigella, E. coli. You know, there's a lot of gram-negative. It has to do with the structure, the cell wall. Like we, you know, the gram-positive guys, they're not all good, but generally they tend to be good. They tend to be like your
Acidophilus,
gram-positive.
Right.
So anyway, there's always kind of an internal battlefield, right? And if we have an excess of the the harmful gram-negative kind of bad guy strains, they can appear to kind of be a low-grade infection. This is especially prominent among, you know, the modern high-fat, low-fiber diet. You know, modern Americans tend to not eat many types of plant species. You know,
yeah,
that has a huge effect.
The fats we're talking about, too, are probably like the trans fats and the plastic fats. And because there's so many. I mean, they're actually saying now, you know, butter, it contains the really, you know, more of the good fats.
That's
I mean, you know, this margarine thing has been really, really horrible. And
oh, gosh.
Yeah, now that
margarine, never to be consumed. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically, these gram-negative guys, they have these cell walls that contain these really gnarly armor. It's called lipopolysaccharides, or LPS.
Okay.
And these are really nasty. So if the barrier of your gut gets sort of worn down, maybe from a diet of sugar and trans fats and, you know, high cortisol, if you're stressed all the time, that stress hormone, I should mention, cortisol, we've all heard of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
kind of like a Ginsu knife on the intestinal surface. So it can really cause leaky tight junctions. There's a lot of research on how people who are really stressed, you know, even if they, you know, have a good job, even if they are happy with their wife or whatever, you know, sometimes stress is something we don't really keep track of. And stress can even be just blood sugar swinging. That's a huge stress.
Sure,
so
sure.
You know, there's a lot of different things that can play with our cortisol. And once you've damaged the gut wall, well, then all those little gnarly armor suits that are the coatings of the bad guy bacteria, those can leak out into your blood and create a huge inflammatory response. I mean, your whole immune system will go into a tailspin trying to clean up all these lipopolysaccharides, these little pieces of cell wall that get into your bloodstream.
So that's the leaky gut thing that we talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And in general, I'd say that there's really some work right now about how taking probiotics, and this is various species. I was just reading one a few minutes ago on Bifido infantis. So, you know, Bifidobacterium infantis is one of the well-studied strains out there. We use it in all of our formulas.
Right,
and
right.
It's been used to lower inflammatory cytokines, which, you know, cytokines are like immune hormones.
Sure.
Kind of like what tell the immune armies to turn on and off. So it's a really powerful lever.
Sure. Well,
when
you get attacked by the flu virus, you get into what we call a cytokine or a cytokine storm.
Yeah.
And that can actually end up, instead of dying from the flu, you die from that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, your body can really overreact. So you get this horrible immune response, I guess, and then that leads to the inflammation. Is that kind of what's going
That's
on?
Right. Yeah. So there's even looking at this with brain problems. You know, there's been a lot of work on the gut-brain axis. You know,
okay.
In July, they discovered lymph in the brain for the first time. So it's, you know, they're rewriting medical textbooks.
Now, wait a minute. What's this?
So in July, big discovery, they discovered lymphatic tissue in the brain, right, kind of interwoven into the meninges, right into the brain, and it was never before discovered. So it's not only the vagal nerve that connects the gut to the brain, which has been really well studied and incredibly profound, but now we're seeing, it's not just the vagal nerve. It's actually the lymph. The whole lymphatic network is connected right into the brain, and it was hidden in plain sight for like hundreds of years. And now it's, as of July, all the papers started coming out. And so, you know, we're just beginning to see that people who have inflammation of the gut, these inflammatory cytokines can be released, which can cross the blood-brain barrier and affect the brain. So there's some real work right now. And I should mention, those inflammatory cytokines are also studied for the skin. So we're not only seeing the effects of inflammatory signals hitting the brain that are coming out of the gut, we're also seeing those inflammatory signals out of the gut that are affecting the skin.
Okay, so because we know inflammation in the brain leads to depression, what we call atypical and sometimes typical depression.
Right.
We talked a lot about that on the show. So now it's going to affect your skin, which is, quote unquote, the biggest organ in your body.
Right.
So you're going to start, itching or what are the
typically
symptoms?
Chronic dermatitis, you know, your acne, your immune-type responses. You
psoriasis
know,
and eczema, maybe?
Eczema is Latin for skin rash. You know?
Okay.
There's a lot of different skin responses that will affect, and obviously there's other factors. Like if you have eczema, I would say low acid and possibly low thyroid should be looked into.
Okay.
So there's a lot of connections there, but I think that when we damage the absorptive surface, we stop absorbing selenium and vitamin D and all these nutrients that work with our blood sugar and work with our liver, a lot of people are starving for protein. You know, they're eating meat and eggs and beans, but they don't absorb it because they have low acid, they have low enzymes, they have a mucosal surface of the bowel that's coated with a lot of bad guys, and this can reduce their absorption of protein. And then once we don't have protein, we can't build all the enzymes and the antibodies and the hormones and the neurotransmitters. I mean, it will make your immune system crumble.
Well, not only that, I think people don't realize that the amino acids and what we call even collagen and so forth actually can make up, finally go down to bone tissue.
Right.
So not getting that original protein, your body absolutely, the bricks and mortar of your body falls apart.
Yeah. It ain't just minerals in there. I think people think that the calcium is the whole story.
Right.
Yeah, it's the cross-linking of collagen that weaves that all together, and bones are mostly protein.
Right. Yeah, I don't think people realize that. They think it's just, you know, well, it's the minerals I ate, so.
Yeah, right.
So we've got this, you know, devastating thing going on with this gram-negative bacteria, and there's probably, and I've seen the old commercials about, you know, the gunk and the plaque that build up in your digestive system and so forth. So what can we do? What can we do to rectify this situation?
Yeah, so a lot of the research is definitely looking at probiotics and prebiotics. I'm a huge fan. There's one I'm going to call out. I think you do carry it. It's one of my favorites. It's called FitBiotic.
Yes, and explain, you know, what is a prebiotic? I don't think people really understand. I know I remember going to a lecture with Dr. Nancy Angelina years ago in Chicago. And, you know, again, you know, we're talking about prebiotics being undigestible fibers, and the greatest source of that is fruits and vegetables. But tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, so prebiotics are of course, like, yeah, they're mostly fibers. You know, all prebiotics are fibers, but not all fiber is prebiotic, right? And it turns out that in your average food, like a banana is like 1% prebiotic, whereas some foods like Jerusalem artichoke is way up there. It's like over half of the fiber is a prebiotic. And what we're talking about is the specific type of bond that is in the fiber. Fibers are basically just glucose polymers. They're big bonds of, you know, sugar molecules all bound together that we can't absorb.
The big sugars,
yeah,
right, yeah.
They're huge sugar compound polysaccharides that you really can't break down.
And the know, big big terms like fructooligosaccharide and
right.
so forth, right, from
right.
inulin fiber, chicory.
As an aside, it fascinates me. If you look at breast milk, you know, the perfect food for humans.
Yes.
One-third of the dry weight is oligosaccharide, which is just amazing to me that one-third of the dry weight is actually a sugar that the baby can't even digest.
Wow, I really didn't know that, but I'm learning a lot today here
it's
with you, Bruce.
It's all for the microbiome. I mean, it turns out that the human immune system just depends upon that teeming mass of bacteria to imprint the entire immune system at a critical window of life.
Right, and then there's like monolaurin. We could go into breast milk. It's really phenomenal.
It's a powerhouse.
Yeah, it really is, yeah.
So there's just all this work right now about how probiotics, you know, and we're really big on our new doctor-formulated line. We're trying to basically make a line of probiotics that is the state-of-the-art. New strains, new technologies, cold shipping, no binders or fillers or polymers or lubricants. It's a really clean line.
Well, I can tell you personally that, you know, the daily and all of your products that you have are really phenomenal. And my customers are very happy. We're seeing phenomenal results with all kinds of diseases and issues and so forth. And again, I'm not going to get into the details on it, but people are coming in. It's wonderful to be able to sell a product and have somebody come back in a couple days or even in a day or so and give you a call and say, hey, I'm really feeling a lot better. Or, you know, and we run into the detox issue too, and we've talked about that before. You know, and that's actually a double-edged sword because it's a good thing because when you detox, you know that what you're taking is what you probably should have been taking, but it's something that, you know, you get a little uncomfortable. But we've talked about the perfect food, the alkalinizer detoxifier, drinking a lot of water and so forth. But now we're getting into something that's there's a lot of prebiotics, so that's kind of going to feed the good bacteria. What do the bad bacteria do with that?
Yeah, well, so the word prebiotic does indicate some selectivity. So generally speaking, and this is not 100% in every case,
Right.
But generally speaking, prebiotics only feed gram-positive strains. So there's, you know, you're not going to tend to see a huge growth rate of E. coli or Salmonella growing on the acacia gum or the Jerusalem artichoke fiber or what have you. Generally, prebiotics do what we want them to do. They feed the good guys, and they have less effect. You know, it's not that they have no effect, but they have a lot less feeding potential for the bad guys.
And you know, Bruce, I hate to keep interrupting, but I'm seeing that more and more with a lot of the supplements, even the turmeric extracts and even in the oregano extracts and a lot of these things, the probiotics that you make and so forth. The good supplements, the good nutraceutical supplements actually feed and help the good bacteria. They help our health, and they're kind of devastating for the bad bacteria. I know even with like the silver hydrosols, the old, you know, we used to call colloidal silver, now they're extremely advanced. They're kind of selective too, and it's really exciting. You know, the mushroom compounds, the bee propolis,
yeah.
I would call it propolis is actually how it's supposed to be pronounced. Around here we say propolis.
Propolis.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, we're seeing how selective these supplements are, and you don't get that with the pharmaceuticals. Usually they come in and you got to deal with all the side effects and everything. We always talk about side benefits, and I just love it.
I know.
So
well,
this is
because this is ancient battlefields. You know, these are alliances that were made millennia ago.
Ah.
You know, polyphenols that exist in plants like curcuminoids.
Right.
You know, they've been in mammals' guts for how many thousands of years?
And those are the animals that survived.
That's right. And so there's been some selection pressure is what the biologists would say.
Okay.
There's been some attuning to their environment. And it turns out that, yeah, polyphenols are actually just like you're describing, you know, that they're great for our good guys. And they're hell on wheels for the bad guys.
Right.
So that's why we need to eat lots of polyphenols from all the bright, fruity, colorful vegetables and fruits. It's really important.
Well, you know, and we talk about, we get into like the bioflavonoids and the flavonoids and so forth. And, you know, the flavonoids are more what we call the flavoring compound.
Mm-hmm.
And the phenols and the bioflavonoids are really more of the, you know, the antioxidant end of it and so forth. And you know, they don't really provide as much of the flavoring, but they provide a lot
of
the
bitter.
Yeah, they're more bitter and they provide more of the antioxidant power and so forth.
Yeah, they're interesting. I mean, they tune our immune system. It's an incredible area. You know, prebiotics are one. I'm starting to use this analogy. I'll try it here. It's sometimes their gut is like an old farm that's really beaten up and the yields are way down.
And full of weeds.
Would be like the seeds. Yeah. You know, they're going to be the new genetics, the heirloom genetics that's going to help any farm.
Right.
But the prebiotics, the fibers, are more like the water and the sunshine and the fertilizer. And
okay.
For a lot of farms, that can make maybe even a bigger difference than sprinkling seeds into the dirt. They need those critical inputs. And prebiotics, to me, are an area of massive interest after years where, personally, I did not promote them. I was kind of like just like, eat your onions and eat your apples and your kale. And I still feel that food can give you a lot of great prebiotics. But I'll tell you what, Mike, I'm now a huge fan of giving people FitBiotic because it's the one product I can sell them that gives them a probiotic and a prebiotic, and it's going to give them gram levels of prebiotics. It's not just like a few hundred milligrams. It's 4,000 milligrams per serving, and it's
wow.
Both stable and organic.
Okay, so all of a sudden you've got this good bacteria that you're putting in, you're doing the reseeding, and then you've got this wonderful soil. The prebiotic, you know, with the water and the sunshine and the soil, and all of a sudden you're going to have probably this great growth. And I know there's certain bacteria, the Plantarum and so forth, that are being used too that are kind of aggressive, but they're good bacteria. And the exciting thing, the thing that I think the bottom line here that we want is to get the good bacteria to take over and be maybe over 90% or more in the digestive system and throughout the body. I mean, you know, you have your respiratory and your urogenital system,
right.
And they do kind of a walkabout.
Yeah.
So what, you know, the health of your, what we call it, and I hate using the word gut, but the health of the bacteria in your small and large intestine and even in your stomach and esophagus and mouth, if that bacteria is healthy, the rest of your body is healthy. But I think one big thing, and we haven't talked about it, you know, we've got the prebiotics, we've got the good probiotics, But I think the one thing people don't realize is good bacteria produces what we call bacteriocins, which are very selective, and they actually will attack the bad bacteria and help protect our body. It's almost kind of like, and we've talked about armor before, the bad bacteria having armor. Well, the good bacteria can put out or produce bacteriocins, which kill not just the bad bacteria, but also viruses and sometimes maybe a mold or what we would call maybe candida or fungal overgrowth. It is really, really exciting. And they will put out bacteriocins that won't hurt us, but will hurt anything attacking us. It's kind of like having a friendly fighter, you know, like a gut friend, you know, and this is where, you know, the immunity and so forth and the, you know, all the positive benefits from the bacteria come from. Now, with this inflammation, so, you know, you've got the good prebiotic, you got the probiotics, and it's going to basically kill this bad bacteria. And does that then shut this inflammatory mechanism down? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I think it's even more than that. You know, it's not only cutting down all those gnarly lipopolysaccharides from leaking into your blood.
Right.
They also make anti-inflammatory compounds. You know, the big one right now is butyrate, you know, named after what butter is, you know, the butyric acid found in butter.
Wow.
You mentioned earlier how healthy butter is.
Yes.
You're exactly right. There's a lot of data now about how the bacteria in your gut make these fatty acids, especially butyric acids,
yes,
that are really powerful anti-inflammatories that sort of tone our immune system and drop some of the overactivity, because sometimes, as you mentioned earlier, our immune system becomes a doomsday device. That
yes.
Once we turn that thing on, the machinery can be so powerful that it can just shut our own lights off.
Well, that's why that's why all these adaptogens, you know, from the herbs and the basically the good probiotic, the good bacteria, and your company is like one of the best. I mean, you've always been, ever since Jordan Rubin, you know, came out with like Primal Defense and so forth, and it was hard to believe at first.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I didn't really buy the products at first. I waited a year or two to see if you'd stay in business, and all of a sudden it just exploded. But you know what? Guess what? We are out of time today, and this has been really exciting. We're going to have to get together and talk more in detail about all of this, because your company makes some of the best probiotic and with the prebiotic and best formulas, and you know, you get your digestive system to where it's really healthy and a lot of other things fall in place.
That's right. It's the tide that rises all boats, I always say.
Yes,
Mike,
sir.
Thank you so much for
thank
having me
you.
On
your show. All right. Have a great day. Thank you.
Life just got a little better thanks to Merryman Earth.